Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Surprised to see three go out of the park today. I know before we were talking weather, it didn't look like anything was going to go, and they got three out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they hit some balls good. I mean, no doubt. I mean, it's sometimes I thought Ian destroyed the ball the last inning. It went nowhere, and Weimer's I think went out of the stadium. So it's I'm not sure. I know it was those balls they hit the right field were hit very well.
Beat by a Weimer. Yeah, that's what, not Whammer. It was the Weimer that got it done today. Judson Richards with you here on Sports Radio 104.3. The Score on opening day. A not-so-great opening day for the Cubs or the Sox. The Cubs fall to the Nats 10-4. Brewers beat the White Sox 14-2. The Score there. We are broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is an opening day. It is also a Sweet 16 day one. Number 3, Illinois versus number 2, Houston. This should be an incredible game tonight. We will talk about it with Ryan Baker of CBS Chicago coming up at 7:45. That game does not tip until 9 o'clock Chicago time. But we want to talk about this Cubs game with you. Where are my Cubs fans at? This is game one of 162. I know it was a little bit of a rant, rant, rant. Does it change how you feel about this team? Does it change what you think they can accomplish? Again, there is no overreaction better than a opening day game one of 162 overreaction. I've admitted a couple of mine. We'll let you share yours, but I'm also more curious about where you find the ceiling of this team to be. Again, Pecota had the Cubs at 89 wins projected. They had the Washington Nationals at 67 wins projected. What's the ceiling for this Cubs team? What player has to have a career year for them to get there? Let's talk about it. We can text about it as well. 312-644-6767. Now, there has been news added besides just the outcome of this opening day game for the Cubs. Nico Hoerner reportedly signing a 6-year contract extension to remain with the Chicago Cubs for a long time, $100+ million deal. I believe he still has to have that physical. And then also, the exact numbers are not out as of yet. How about this stat? From at JHeyKid, I'll give credit to where I saw this on X. By the way, follow me at Judson Richards on the X. Nico Hoerner's 6.2 WAR last season is the 8th best season by a Cubs position player in the wild card era. That is only behind Sammy Sosa, who did it twice in 98 and 01, Derek Lee in 05, Chris Bryant in 2016, Javier Baez, and Anthony Rizzo. That is some pretty damn good company that Nico Hoerner is keeping. And by the way, he is quietly keeping that company. He has been on one of the most team-friendly deals. I mean, he was on a three-year, this is the third year of the contract that he signed back in 2024, a three-year, $35 million deal to ultimately, as of last year, be the best second baseman in all of baseball with that 6.2 WAR. Just to give you an idea, now WAR, again, I know I'm saying that a lot, it is wins above replacement player. It is the best way, statistically, we can just look at what an average or replacement player would be and then see how much better a great player can give you, right? How many more wins they add for you each season. For example, PCA, as great as he was, played the best defense in all of center field around Major League Baseball, starting center fielder. The amount of home runs he hit, he was just a 6 WAR. Not just, that's pretty phenomenal. But I say just because Nico Hoerner was 6.2. Another way to look at it, Nico had a 5.5 WAR in 2023, a 6.2 WAR in 2025. Alex Bregman hasn't been better than either of those since 2019. Now, the ops plus of Alex Bregman is better because of his slug, his ability to drive the baseball. Nico was so valuable because of his career 340 on base percentage. I think it was 345 last year, and how great he is defensively, and also stealing bases. PCA is the face. Alex Bregman is your star. Nico Horner is the lifeblood of this team. He is the heartbeat. He is just, and I'll put him with Dansby Swanson. Those are your everyday guys that set the bar with the way they show up and get it done. 312-644-6767. Nico Horner, also a great part of this station. Hopefully he will be on to talk about his new contract when he can. He was asked about it this morning. Could not talk a lot about it. He was asked about Pete Crow Armstrong embracing Chicago and his contract.
Pete's contract has been out there. What are your thoughts on that? And, you know, everybody in here deserves a lot. How do you look at it?
I look at it as an amazing opportunity for the player and the team. You know, I hope both are incredibly happy. Both should be. You know, he's someone that's embraced Chicago as a whole, everything that he has. And, you know, we can project what Pete's going to be like as a player with this and that, but at the end of the day, you have someone that passionately cares about winning and wants to impact the game every single day. And, you know, through the great times last year, through challenging times, he worked incredibly hard throughout, and I believe in him a lot.
All right, so that was Nico Horner with a little Alan Jackson in the background. So the California Kids, PCA, and Nico Horner are now Chicagoans and Chicago Cubs, both signing six-year contract extensions as the Cubs continue to spend a lot of money in the offseason, along with the Alex Bregman deal. Of course, PCA signing up for a couple years ago. Now all they got to do is win. After losing 10-4. And Matthew Boyd, the stats on Matthew Boyd, and I'd like to hear from you. 312-644-6767. What is the ceiling of this team? What happened today? What do you make of what happened today, and who has to have a career year for them to reach? I'm still bullish on this team, 92, 93, perhaps 94 wins. They got to show up with a little bit more than they had today. But the numbers on Matthew Boyd are wild. Again, he struck out 5 in a row heading into that disastrous fourth inning. He struck out the side in the third inning. He had 7 strikeouts through 3 innings. He ended up giving up 6 earned runs in this game. He did not allow 6 earned an entire game all of last year. He generated 20 swings and misses on 37 swings. That's 4 more than his single game high in 2025. It was like he was told, hey, you're only going to go 3 innings. Give us all you got. And then they sent him out for the fourth. He wasn't told that by any means. But that's how quickly his velocity dipped. Almost a mile and a half or close to 2 miles in that fourth inning where he ran out of speed. Let's hear from Matthew Boyd after the game on the outing that he had.
Felt really good. Felt really good all day. You know, just it was executing pitches and whatnot. And then just fourth inning. Honestly, I just needed to make an adjustment faster. And that, you know, I wasn't able to. And, you know, that's kind of the story of the game. You know, unfortunately, that was the difference maker. Gave them a big enough lead to kind of roll with it. And that's, you know, that's just on me. I got to make an adjustment faster and you know, I'll be better from it. But, yeah, it's unfortunate.
Should Craig Counsell have gone with a different starter? Also, do you have any issues with the starting lineup and how it laid out? 312-644-6767. I also am curious how many out there are a believer in Craig Counsell that he can all get it done. Again, text line is open. 312-644-6767. Judson Richards with you. Until 9 o'clock this evening, Ryan Baker to break down Illinois and Houston coming our way at 7:45 tonight on 104.3 The Score. I thought that Pete Crow Armstrong had a really, really good game. The thing about watching PCA is there is so much made of his approach at the plate and his swings and misses and him going after balls and putting himself in bad counts is you almost lean in to watch each and every pitch because it is so clearly, it's so clear what he's able to do and so clear with how he can get there. For example, that 1-1 pitch is crucial. And today, he swung at a pitch that would have been a ball, swung and missed, and instead of being 2-1, the driver's seat, he found himself at 1-2. And I thought Pete Crow Armstrong does this really great thing whenever he's interviewed, is there is no nonsense, there is zero agenda, he is going to be direct as possible. He stood in front of the media for 10 minutes and really, really got into his swing, his approach, his offseason, everything that he's doing. Like, the way he talked about himself almost sounded like a coach talking about a player on his team. That is how really direct he was at what he has to get better at. So here's Pete Armstrong, spring training, telling us about the swing adjustments he made this offseason.
We just noticed that, like, when the setup was out of whack and I wasn't really, you know, getting in the box the same way and everything, that's when the swing kind of went to crap, and it's when the mechanical stuff started, you know, kind of playing a bigger role in the lack of success. So I've literally just tried working on getting in the box the exact same way every swing I take this offseason, and really mastering and perfecting my setup so I don't have to worry about a new stance and a different feel here and a different feel there when July rolls around, and I shouldn't be worrying about those kind of things anyways. So yeah, just repping out the setup numerous times so I can let the swing play.
Yeah, repping out the setup, making sure that when you get in the box, it's the same each and every time. You're not changing things. You don't give yourself other things to think about. The text line is wide open, 312-644-6767. This one from the 847. Do you know if PCA is still working with Ken Griffey Jr.? Must be nice to be from Beverly Hills. Also must be nice to sign a $100-plus million contract and be a spectacular center fielder. Another one from the 847. Do you think being on Team USA roster and around all those leaders made PCA a better player now? The short answer is yes. It may make him 0.004% better, but this is all growth, right? This is him moving on from being a rookie to a young player and now moving on closer to veteran status, right? Where you're, instead of having 500 or 750 at-bats under your belt as a big league hitter, it gets to 1,000 to 2,000. And then just the repetitive nature over and over and the amount of experiences that you have, the people that you talk to, where at some point you become the insider and the expert on your own swing. You're not always going to the coaches or the player next to you, Alex Bregman, to help you understand your swing in itself. What I saw from Pete Armstrong today is exactly the thing that I think would make him the best Cubs player. Because last year, first half of the season, you know what he was? He was a sledgehammer. 25 home runs before the All-Star break. And that's what got him as a starting center fielder. The thing that would make him great? Death by 1,000 paper cuts. Because the sledgehammer, yes, he's going to hit his home runs. But what is the approach at the plate to get there? The death by 1,000 paper cuts, one of those things is the bunt that he laid down today. I also saw a very savvy thing as he went from at bat one to at bat two, where he swung and missed on a couple of breaking balls, struck out his first at bat. The second at bat, you know what he got an RBI single off of? That same breaking ball that he was swinging and missing. Now, I don't know if he was looking for it. That would be very savvy if he thought, hey, he's gotten me out on this. I've swung and missed on this. I'm going to look for it up. I'm going to look for this curveball. He probably thinks he can get me out on it, and I'm going to get a knock on it. Like, if that's what he did, he may have just seen it up and jumped all over it. Because another thing you can do, if you swing and miss a ton, you may not want to hit deep in the counts and jump on more fastballs. But I thought that the death by 1,000 paper cuts and allow the home runs to just come whenever they do is how Pete Armstrong can be at his best. When he's on the bases, man. I mean, he's the kind of guy, a pass ball, he may take two bases. If he's at first base, ball driven to the gap, he may score from first. Right? It's the little things that will slowly lead to big things when you have his capabilities on the baseball field. But you can't be swinging and missing all the time. More from PCA. Here he is on chasing pitches.
I know what I do well. I know what I don't do well. I know that I chase. I know that I can get away with hitting bad balls and doing damage on bad balls, but the consistency there is not, there is no consistency there really. It's very sporadic, and I think, the swing, we've kind of ironed that out. Like, it's not the most perfect thing in the world, but the steps we've taken with the swing over the last 3-plus years has been incredible, and I'm very proud of that. What I'm not so proud of yet is the 280 on base percentage and the 55% swing rate or whatever it was. Like, that's no fun. I had a lot more fun when I was playing well, and when I was playing well, I was keeping the ball in the middle of the plate, and I was able to do damage there. So there's a bunch of things I need to do to make myself a more well-rounded offensive asset, and we're getting there for sure.
That was Pete Quarmstrong over spring training breaking down what he needs to do to be better at the plate. I thought it showcased very, very early on. Even in the WBC, he looked very good, and I thought that he was solid today just from a guy looking to have better bat-to-ball skills. It's a very simple way to say him doing what I think the most difficult thing in sports is, of facing the kind of stuff that he faces on a daily basis, especially because he isn't spelled when they're going lefty-lefty because they need him in center field with how great he is there. Tyler, do you mind if I reference my own baseball career for a moment? I was pick 1,000 to the San Francisco Giants back in 2004. I asked because it feels a little absurd when talking about, you know, these someone like Pete Quarmstrong. But I will say, one of the things I remember very, very clearly being in the minors is one of the things that they said over and over is learn how to hit first and the home runs will follow. It felt like for Pete Quarmstrong, the home runs came first instead of him learning how to hit. Now, again, if you are hitting the ball properly and there is backspin on the ball and it will leave the yard if you have natural power like Pete Quarmstrong does. So when I say death by a thousand paper cuts, I'm not saying don't hit home runs. I'm just saying your approach has to be implemented. You have to be more selective of the pitches that you go after. And then over time, you'll be not only a guy who doesn't have a 280 on base percentage, hopefully in the threes, so he can be great, but then also a guy that can hit home runs.
Nothing wrong with low-hanging fruit, but then once you are accustomed to doing that, it adds up, and then boom, that's when you start to find your power. But to your point, doing the little things.
When the pitching is that great, if you find yourself behind in the count, you're screwed. You just are. They are just too damn good. So you have to hit your pitch and not their pitch. That's easy to say, sitting in a chair with my arms on it. That's an armchair quarterback. But if he has the vision, because that's the thing about us talking about his swing so much, it is about his eyes, it is about his confidence level. That's what it is. I think you can see when Pete Quarmstrong is playing with confidence, things are going really, really well. You know why? Because baseball is a reactive thing to do. Hitting a baseball is reactive. When you have point whatever seconds it is, you cannot be thinking about what you're doing. You have to have a clear mind, and the clearer the mind, often is a confident mind. And that's what it comes down to. And I thought he was the savvy one at the plate today, especially in that second at bat against Cavalli. I will say, though, if I could complain for a moment about the lineup, I'd like Pete Quarmstrong at where he is in his career now, lower in the lineup. You know, as the cleanup hitter, the way that they build lineups has drastically changed. For example, last year, he did some of his best work, I thought, in the seventh spot. When he hit fourth last year, he had 13 home runs, but he only batted .249 with a .291 on base percentage, 60 strikeouts. When he hit seventh in the lineup, 102 less plate appearances there, but 11 home runs, .286 batting average, a .316 on base percentage, and just 32 strikeouts. It felt like the lower leverage spots were not necessarily the high leverage. We're expecting a lot for him to do there in the cleanup spot. I just like him a little bit better lower in the order. And the Cubs were at their best last year when they were getting production from the top and the bottom of the order. I would hate it if they moved him down a little bit. 312-644-6767. This is a safe place for an overreaction opening day with 161 games to go. Any concerns about this team? I see plenty on the text line. We can read about it. And what did you make of what happened today out at Wrigley? Give me your reaction, what the ceiling is for this Cubs team. Also, automatic balls and strikes. Oh, there's plenty of thoughts from Cubs players and coaches on ABS. Do you like it? We'll talk about it coming up next on 104.3 The Score.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know if I have thoughts on it yet, to be completely honest. I hope that, you know, it's kind of like the replay system. I hope it takes out the egregious missed calls and stuff. I don't see myself challenging much or anything at all. I think there's stats that show pitchers are the worst at challenging because we're the furthest away and probably the most emotional, you know, when you throw like a 3-2 pitch or whatever. So I'll let the catchers do it. You know, I think they'll be pretty good at it, and I think our team's going to find a way just because we're so many veterans and professional. Like, I think we'll find a way to be good at it.
All right, that was Jameson Tyone on Inside the Clubhouse talking about ABS, the automated balls and strike system. Judson Richards back here with you, 104.3 The Score. By the way, coming up in just 15 minutes, Ryan Baker of CBS Chicago will join us live from Houston as we get set for number 3 Illinois versus number 2 Houston in the Sweet 16. That should be an incredible game. I can't believe Houston has been to 7 consecutive Sweet 16. They're like a new blue blood. In college basketball, but Illinois also exceptional as well. I think that's going to be a tremendous game. We'll get an idea of how Houston, the crowd-wise, of them playing 2 miles from their own stadium. We'll do that in just 15 minutes. I did want to talk a little ABS, automated balls and strikes. I've got my thoughts on it. I want to hear yours. 312-644-6767. Do you like that baseball has implemented it? Do you think that this is a unique and entertaining part of the game? Maybe you're a little more old school and think that it's stupid. 312-644-6767. Jeff is with us on the road on 104.3 The Score. Hey, Jeff, what's going on?
How are you? No, I do not like it. I'm thinking, what's the purpose of it? Why not just get rid of the home plate umpire at all? In fact, the hell with it. Get rid of all the umpires because there isn't one play on a ball field, not one play on a ball field, regardless of what it is, that can't be reviewed and overturned. Once you have an opportunity to, you know, to run it through the computer or have people look at it. So in reality, if they're trying to get rid of the umpires, which it kind of sounds like they're going in that direction, I don't know why, but I think it's just going to destroy the game, to tell you the truth.
Jeff, do you not like any instant replay around any sports?
You know, I think at first I really didn't like it in the NFL, but I think we've gotten so used to it in the NFL that we really don't even think about it anymore.
But don't you think it solves? Don't you think it can actually lend itself to be a good part of the game now that you've gotten used to it in football?
Yeah, but why is it absolutely necessary? I mean, for how many decades have referees and umpires been doing a job, and for the most part, been doing a really, really good job? I mean.
Right, so you know what, Jeff, I was just going to say, it's an incredibly difficult job, I agree with you. Couldn't you say it actually helps them a little bit with their job, where it does? You don't have to be perfect as a human, you can only see so much, so it allows an opportunity for a team to not just rely on the human element as good as they are?
Well, that's true, but I'm thinking to myself, okay, hasn't it worked for the last 50 years? Yes, it has. Has it been perfect? No, nothing is perfect, but it's worked. And baseball has survived and has continued to be, you know, America's pastime. And I'm thinking, okay, if it's worked the past 50 years, what do they hope to gain from this? That I don't know what there is to gain from this.
Jeff, thanks for the phone call. Do you agree with Jeff? Do you think, hey, listen, the game is the way that it should be, the right way, instead of implementing a lot of these new things? I'd venture to guess that Jeff may not love not allowing the shift, or he may not allow the pitch clock. What do you say? 312-644-6767. I think that ABS in Major League Baseball is a brilliant move. You know what I like most about it? You can add intrigue, strategy, and drama to the game with something that takes seconds to find out the correct answer to. And you still keep the umpires out there if you want to go see a manager yell at them sometime, right? Like, we still have that to go. And at the same time, you only get two of them. So if an umpire is having a terrible day, guess what? You can show them up all game long. Again, you don't just get to use two. You get to keep the two as long as you get it right. This happened in spring training where there were consecutive at-bats of missed calls. They challenged it. The hitter, catcher, or pitcher was right. It was overturned. And you get to keep your challenges. See, Major League Baseball has done something where I thought they may never do, and they got out of their own way, and they actually got creative. Like, I like that you don't allow the shift. The best thing to happen in Major League Baseball is the pitch clock. They didn't have a length of game problem. They had a pace of play problem, and they were able to fix that. I think we have Theo Epstein probably to thank for all of this. We have Theo to thank for a lot of things around Major League Baseball and more locally in Chicago. It's also incredibly unique where it is you on the field that makes a decision. It's not Ben Johnson. It's not someone who's watching from up above, who's telling him the decision to make that's got 15 seconds or whatever. You can go much longer than that in the NFL to talk about it. It's not Billy Donovan making the decision. It is either the hitter, the pitcher, or the catcher. And it's not going to be many pitchers. I've certainly have heard that. Right? When they deliver and their head snaps down, they're not really looking clearly. But it adds, I think, great drama, intrigue, and strategy. And ultimately, if you've got bases loaded, two outs in the ninth inning, and there's a call that's missed, you have a chance to live another pitch. 312-644-6767. Sam is with us in Wisconsin on the score. Sam, what do you make of ABS?
Well, maybe I've listened to too much DB over the years, but Joe Sheeman. No, the reality is this the whole not having instant replay in baseball in many ways hasn't worked, and that's why we're going to the system and likely going further. I mean, it's not even really a matter of opinion. Like, they've done studies on this, and the truth is home plate umpires in many cases are pretty bad at calling balls and strikes, and maybe not everybody's noticed, but the truth is it's really hurting the game. It's really leading to, shall we say, a lot of home runs, strikeout, and walk, and not balls in play. And I don't know why more even the most old school of old school wouldn't want to fix that.
So you like the implementation of ABS?
I mean, pretty much. Again, ball and strike calls are not they're not judgment calls. They're not pass interference or personal foul. They're either are or they aren't. And they're either right or wrong.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot like tennis, how they're able to do it as clearly as they are. I think I may feel different about it if it didn't work out so quickly, where if it didn't take, I think it's 15 seconds or less than that on average to find out whether or not it was a ball or strike and you continue on. But the strategy is, when do you use them? How early can you use them? Are there players that aren't allowed to use them? You know, as Craig Counsell said, by the way, let's hear from Craig on this. Tyler, let's hear from Craig Counsell on ABS. We'll get back to these phone calls in just a moment.
We've had a couple meetings about it, probably three, and just really kind of started out very general with it and then at the beginning of spring, and then try to get into some more specific stuff as we went. And I think it's really just trying to be smart with it in general, in terms of when you use it, just and try to increase the leverage of, like, an 0-0 count the first pitch of the game should not be challenged, you know. And just as leverage increases, as base runners increase early in the game, there's a good time for it. If you lose one, it's probably then you have to be pretty judicious with it, kind of mid-game. So we've gone over of some things, but look, this is you know, something that's there's going to be guys that get it wrong. There's going to be guys that get it right. We're going to cheer. We're going to say, oh no, why didn't we challenge? Because a ball missed by 0.4 inch. So, you know, I think, and I also think 3 weeks into this, we will all have a really good idea of kind of how this works. But we will remind players kind of as they go up, you know, good time to challenge, things like that, or this is, we're getting into an inning where, you know, if you feel it, go for it. Of course,
you know, that's Craig Counsell on ABS. It's interesting that Craig can, you know, they can kind of devise a strategy, but then his players have to go out and implement it. In fact, Nico Horner, Judson Richards with you tonight on the score. If you missed it, Nico Horner did sign or is planning to sign a 6-year contract extension. We do not have the exact numbers. I believe he still has to go through the physical, but Nico Horner expected to sign a 6-year contract extension with the Cubs. Nico had a chance to use it today, late in the game, runners on. I'll be curious to hear from Nico what he thought about it, and it wouldn't shock me if he just forgot that it was an option. You only have a few seconds to decide. Like, I think some of these guys be like, oh yeah, I forgot.
It's 2 seconds. Like, it's really, really quick.
It's immediate. It's immediate. It's a great part of it, and we are brand new into it. Let's get to one more phone call before we talk to Ryan Baker from Houston. Let's go to Mike in Lake Geneva. I love him, Mike. I don't love you, Mike. I don't know you, Mike, but I do love Lake Geneva. What's going on?
Well, you know, that warms my heart.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Now I love you, Mike.
Well, listen, you know what? I just wanted to pick up on this ABS discussion you're having here, and it's a short and sweet comment, though. I think that, you know, you had a caller earlier talk about how we've watched for 50 years umpires making, you know, good calls behind home plate and other times not good calls, and we've lived with it. I just think that the influx of sports wagering has really it requires this because, like, you know, I think there are so many openings in baseball and in really every other professional sport where, you know, down the line, we're going to see things being manipulated. We've already got a flavor of that in Major League Baseball with the Cleveland Indian players that were doing some of that. I just think that, you know, anything that we can do to eliminate, you know, the idea that somebody might be acting out of bad faith because of wagering, I think it's something to consider. And I don't mean to sound like a prude when it comes to gambling. I love playing poker with my buddies, but I just worry about the integrity of the game.
Yeah, Mike. No, I agree. That's a great call, and you can keep watch on everybody. As long as, again, those major moments in a game, like as long as you've held on to those too. You know, when does Craig Counsell allow them to implement it? When or how major of a moment can it change? There was a huge moment in the Padres-Cubs wild card round with the bases loaded, I believe, for the Padres, that the Cubs got a very favorable call. It was big enough that it could have changed the outcome of that three-game series. I absolutely believe that. And I think it adds to intrigue, drama, and strategy into Major League Baseball. And it's coupled with it only takes a few seconds to figure out. That is a brilliant move by Major League Baseball. All right, let's switch gears. Illinois has a major game against the University of Houston. Where is this game being played? In Houston, Texas. Ryan Baker of CBS Chicago is there. We'll get an idea of what that crowd may or may not look like of Houston versus Illinois. Is it going to be a flat-out road game for the Illini? We'll find out. That's next on The Score.
Hey, y'all. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze. Let's love.
Asked that before, and I'll be honest, I could care less. I'm going to sound really kind of selfish here. I'm an old JUCO ball coach. I drove on 16-passenger vans. I drove from Dodge City, Kansas to Mesa, Arizona for a basketball game, for a tournament in a bus. You had told me back then that I'm getting to coach basketball in the Sweet 16 and play Houston. I would sign up for it. I would crawl to get there. If we want to beat them, no matter where we play them, we'd have to play great. Guess what? We're going to have to do that tomorrow. And I think they're going to have to play well if they want a chance to beat us. And so we've won on the road. We've been pretty successful doing that in the Big Ten. So I don't pay too much attention to it. I'm just grateful for the opportunity. And, you know, playing Houston's a challenge enough. It doesn't matter where.
Man, that was such a great soundbite. Brad Underwood, head coach, University of Illinois, discussing about where they're playing. Yes, they're in the Sweet 16. It'll be a tough matchup tonight for Brad Underwood and the Illini going up against a 2-seed in Houston. 7 straight Sweet 16s and played in a championship game last year. Houston become quite the college basketball program. Judson Richards back here with you on The Score. Ryan Baker, CBS Chicago, is the man in Houston, Texas. Ryan, thanks for your time. How's Houston?
It is hot, and I hope it gets even hotter tonight with an Illini win. That means I'm staying through Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt.
To the Elite Eight.
Yeah, no doubt. Ryan, can you give us an idea, again, so much made of Houston is playing 2 miles away from their campus in this matchup. What does it feel like, Illini fans versus Cougar fans?
You know, earlier, before I came over to the Toyota Center, I was at a pregame gathering, and I tell you what, the most red I saw was the big red from Nebraska, more than Houston. Of course, they live here. They're not going to be hanging out at all the bars and restaurants, per se, before, like, the out-of-towners. But I'm telling you, I mean, of course, I don't know what else there is to do in Nebraska. That's a road trip. But the big red machine is here in full effect. And they are, and right now, it's a tie game with Iowa. And you got three Big Ten teams here in the South region with a lot of Midwestern flair, which is kind of crazy to think you get three big, you could have an all Big Ten Elite Eight. You're going to have at least one Big Ten team. And if Illinois survives and advances tonight against a very, very talented Houston team, you will have two Big Ten teams vying for a spot in the Final Four. But, you know, Houston's it's been a tremendous host. What a sports day in Houston. The Astros home opener right down the street. You got two Sweet 16 games, and they also got the Texas Open going on, the first round of a PGA Tour. So a lot happening down here in H-Cup.
Yeah, Houston loves to entertain. I've covered a Final Four radio though there, radio row there, and a Super Bowl radio row. Mm-hmm. Houston does a tremendous job of making or forcing you to come to their city when it comes to these sporting events. What will it take tonight for Illinois to get this victory, Ryan?
Listen, this is, you know, like playing at the park and you're trying to stay on the court and you keep the next team that has next off from getting on. I mean, it's going to be like that. I mean, Kelvin Sampson, and, you know, his style of play speaks for itself. I mean, a couple of years ago when Illinois played Houston, I think it was 2022, I was with a buddy, and it was like, man, that's prison ball. I mean, they got brass knuckles out. You're going to have some scrapes and scratches. I mean, they are the Cougars. They scratch and claw. They are relentless, and I expect that defensive effort. They're gonna try to get the ball out of Keaton Wagler's hands and force him to make plays instead of, you know, scoring the ball. And, you know, it's going to be how Illinois handles that pressure, responds to the pressure, and attacks it. And if they can do those things and continue to own the offensive glass, which has been their calling card all season, they'll have a chance to, you know, achieve Elite Eight status by night's end. But they're going to have to match and even surpass Houston's toughness tonight. And that's what it's going to come down to, because this is going to be an old-school street fight.
Yeah, no doubt. He's Ryan Baker of CBS Chicago there in Houston. Is it the Toyota Center? Ryan, I should have looked before. That's where you got the Toyota Center?
It is the Toyota Center. Yeah, it hasn't been traded in yet. It's still Toyota Center.
Toyotas, they run and run and run. Ryan, to your point, to what you just said, could this game a little bit come down to how it's officiating? Like, if they allow an all-out dogfight, that's what Houston wants. I do believe Illinois is a more skilled team, whether it's player-wise or the way that they run their offense and set up. If it's forced to be a little bit more hands-off and a little more skilled, could the officials play a hand in whether or not Illinois gets to the Elite Eight?
I mean, the officials can always dictate the outcome of the game, and you got to see, one, how they're going to start to call the game. Are they going to remain consistent? And when the game's on the line, are you going to inject yourself into the outcome or let the kids decide the game? So, and you won't know that till the ball is tipped. But I'm a firm believer that, you know, the more aggressive team can dictate the officiating and the flow and set that tempo. So, look, you go back to Illinois' win over VCU. Granted, VCU lost one of the top guards, a minute or so into the game, but Illinois, instead of jacking up a plethora of threes, they pounded the paint. The Ivicic twins went to work, even though Big Z had just one field goal. It might have been the most impactful of the game, that thunderous throwdown off a, you know, partial block on the other end. It just changed the momentum of the game. So you have to attack the basket. I think Andre Stojakovic is going to be huge tonight, because when you're playing a team like Houston, similar to VCU, that has a lot of athletes, you have to put your best athlete out there. And I think he is. I mean, he can get to the rim. He can get his shot. So I think it's important to – I think he's going to have to play a big role tonight. But that's everybody. I mean, Ben Humrickhouse comes off the bench and does so many little things that don't show up on the stat sheet, whether it's keeping plays alive, tip balls, coming down with rebounds, spotting up, hitting the open shot as much as Jake Davis will need to do that, because, you know, when they double Keaton, he's going to be looking to kick that ball out to a Mirkovic, to Humrickhouse or Davis, and those guys got to be ready to put up the shot and knock it down. So, look, this is a very different team than the one that Houston, you know, dominated a few years back in the second round of the tournament. I mean, this is a deep, talented, skilled, big team with size and shooting and skill at every position. So, I mean, Illinois has all of those things. What concerns me, as we saw down the stretch of the regular season, is can you close? Can you finish? Mm-hmm. And you have four overtime losses. I mean, those are glaring. It wasn't a one-off. I mean, you have to be able to, you know, the theme in the locker room is that we want to punch first, we want to swing first. Well, that's fine, but it's not like you're going to knock Houston out. I'm more concerned with how they respond when they get knocked down. Are you going to get back up, or is it going to be like the Michigan game in Champaign, or God forbid, a couple years ago in the Elite Eight against UConn? When you get hit with the blitzkrieg, do you fold, or are you going to respond? I think this team has some mettle to it. I love their connectivity. I love their camaraderie, and they like to compete. And you could see the team like hitting their stride at the right time. Of course, they had a great draw in Greenville that you get two teams you should have beaten by double digits. It was an average of, 28 points. But now, tonight, will be a step up in class. I think this thing's going down to the wire.
Ryan, I would say thanks for staying up with us, but your night is just getting started.
It really is. It's going to be a fun morning by the time I get out of here tonight. Out of the locker room, either getting ready for an Elite Eight matchup or, you know, kind of dissecting a good but maybe not great Illini season. I mean, they're back in the Sweet 16 for the second time in 3 years. It's hard to do after, you know, a decade plus of either no tournament or not making a showing. I think Brad Underwood's done a phenomenal job to restore Illinois basketball back to national prominence, where it's expected 20-plus wins, upper echelon of the Big Ten, a high seed, top four seed in the NCAA tournament, to do those things repeatedly. Okay, now is the next step. I mean, I think it was a huge monkey off their back to get to the second weekend after last year's disappointment in Milwaukee. You did that. Okay, now, like tonight, I mean, it's a two seed and a three seed. I think if you lose the game, is there shame in that? No, but you want to be in a position where the bar is Sweet 16 of Elite Eight. Because I truly believe if Illinois wins this game tonight, they're going to the Final Four. And it's not going to be a cakewalk against Nebraska or Iowa. But, you know, if Illinois plays their game and they get past tonight, they'll be in Indianapolis next weekend.
Ryan, let's hope you're covering a win on CBS Chicago. We'll be watching. Thanks so much for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, enjoyed that. Ryan Baker of CBS Chicago, they're live in Houston, Texas, getting a set for Houston versus Illinois, which is a 9 o'clock or shortly after tip time, Chicago time there in Houston. Hour number 3 on The Score, coming up next.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.